not starting to drip. Drip, 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 drip.
Anyway, so my name's Ira. So nice to meet you.
Likewise.
So what? I don't know. What should I call you? Doctor or professor or Andrew or? What do you prefer?
Yeah. What do you think for the audience?
Man, honestly, that's kind of really up to you because it bothers some people. Some people don't care, you know.
Yeah, I could do Dr. Morgan or Andrew.
Yeah,
Or switch between both of them.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. No worries. Well, not too many rules. Pardon me. I was going to say if you need to take a break or whatever. No dramas. I can just edit it out. It is adults only, so I tend to drop the odd F-bomb. I normally give people a heads up on that. I'll try and be a good boy. And then any questions that you don't want to answer, just like feel free to pass. I'm not really like a gotcha kind of guy. I'm more just like a super curious, you know, person. So that's about it. So I'll get some notes. I actually just sent you an email as well with a couple of videos, which we'll get to. I'll ask you. I just kind of want to get your opinion, really.
Right.
A friend of mine sees these regularly up north.
Okay.
We'll get to all that. So first thing I actually did want to ask you is whereabouts were you born and did you sort of grow up?
I was in New Zealand, so I was born in New Zealand. We came over to Australia in 2012 with my family to Perth. So been here a little while.
Oh, okay. And any particular reason why Perth?
Job opportunities, really, in industry at the time, in the resources industry. So I'd been working in equivalent of a TAFE in New Zealand, lecturing and teaching in maritime and marine studies, having just come out of the Navy as an officer. And then I did that for 5 years. And, we looked at opportunities elsewhere. And we decided Perth might be good to get some work in the oil and gas industry and environmental consulting. So we did that when I came over here and family followed me over. But I ended back up teaching sort of after 5 years of consulting in oil and gas. Contract work was getting a bit hard. So, I went back to teaching, but teaching high school science.
Yeah, okay. So you've got a pretty wide, varied experience there, Navy and all that.
There's a bit to my background. Yeah, quite diverse.
Yeah, I've read all your papers online. watched all your YouTube videos. You've gone from like sea cucumbers to orbs.
Yes, I do. I do reminisce and look retrospectively at how I ended up going from marine organisms to phenomena like orbs, and then how I've entered into that whole space. Excuse the pun, and involve a bunch of very interesting people around the world. The more I get into it, so that's been an interesting journey in and of itself, and writing about it as well.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about how that all happened then. How did you get into, you know, the orbs? That's my particular interest, obviously.
I'd started writing my science fiction novel series, Skimmer, a thriller set in the deep sea mining industry in 2040, and I was starting to build in this whole plot around rolling out reverse engineered UFO technology in these deep sea mining skimmers to make them transmedium. So I was already researching because I did a lot of research on the whole historical narrative of UFOs to weave that into the plot. And then I moved to the Pilbara 6 years ago to teach at the mining town in Newman, and things really started to kick off then. Yeah, both with anomalous phenomena happening to myself, which I wrote that book on, Shadows, Another Life. And then I got interested in camping and infrared camera technology, because I've got a telescope and all that, but I was interested in what else was around. So it was only when I had a feeling that there was more to this than meets the eye, and I took the camera camping and then started picking up these orbs, and I thought, well, are they orbs or are they insects? And there's this whole low frame rate camera blurring commentary that goes on. I took a bit of other gear up there as well, and yes, I had a 30 frames per second camera speed, but I tried to go back there a lot of times and just do the same thing over and over again and build this huge archive of orb footage, which I went through and analysed and looked for insect footage, which I did, and I've commented on that too. I made a short video after I talked to Ross Coltart about that whole looking at insect infrared photography, because we've got footage of that, so that we did quite a comparison there, and then a lot of suggestions about future work. So I started to understand quite a lot about orbs, and then connecting that to UAP and UAP technology and the phenomenon, plus the personal stuff that was happening to me. So that whole story evolved over the four or five years in Newman, and I just started building up a profile, writing papers, writing articles, making posters, continued to write books. I've got another book coming out in the middle of this year on the science of UAP. What's it called? It's called Forbidden Science of Secrets. That's coming out in about July.
Forbidden Science. Yeah. I'll write that down. I've written your other book down too as well. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And so, basically your personal experience is what sparked the interest. And that seems to be such a common thread, because I for myself, but also people like, you know, in the UFO community, so to speak. And really most people just kind of curious, because they just really want to know what they are. So really, and then obviously the connection, because you're now like doing this for proper research. And so how does the jump go from that, some sort of like amateur curiosity, to like, okay, let's go look at this properly?
That was because I've got a science background. So, and interestingly enough, I was brought up religious. So my dad was a priest. And so there was a lot of things I had to think about in terms of reconciling belief with science, and making sure, because a lot of people, when they don't understand something, sometimes it's a fear-based response, and yes, then they place or project themselves onto what they don't understand, and it becomes a reflection of themselves. And I think orbs, if they are NHI, probably actually do this. To know what they truly are, you have to drop your belief system. I think if there's a connection with consciousness, because there's all this consciousness studies coming out now, that somehow or in some way, whatever this field they operate in at that level connects with you, and there's a very real prospect of it just reflecting back at you what your perception of reality is. So in terms of the science of it all, I thought, well, as they say in The Martian, I need to science this. And I had the huge background in science, and thought, well, what I need first is statistics. How am I going to get statistics, so valid data that's repeatable and measurable? So I started with that, and then, okay, so in the field, if I sample like this, I can start getting some data. Yes, the gear could be better, but at least I've got a rigorous methodology that I can analyze. And I went from there, and then it was a matter of going into the literature on UAP and looking for those rigorous studies that could inform my narrative and a way forward. And so I went from there, and I did a parallel to that, I did look a lot at the grey literature as well. So I did a lot of grey literature research on the history of UFOs, the whole term coined anti-gravity. I started looking at the science of that. And then I ended up deciding, well, from the research I've done, anti-gravity is a term I'm not going to use. It's ambiguous. It was coined when people didn't understand what was going on. So I stayed away from that. I said, yeah, but that doesn't really tell anyone what the science of all that is and how it's connected with the phenomenon or structured craft, because it's a mosaic of the phenomenon. There's right from orbs through to structured craft and entities or beings in their various forms. And then there's the spiritual side of it too. And that's all connected somehow. So you had to I had to tread a careful path. And there's not, I don't think many people are actually following the science. There's a lot of the history of UFOs, declassified documents, the narrative historically about programs. And I thought, but there's very few saying, okay, so what's the actual science? How do these craft do what they do? And so that's my, research stream or focus. And I've got a small group of people behind me that support what I'm doing around the world. And some of them don't want to be made known, and some of them are well known. And so I've got involved with them as well. And from the feedback they've given me and the research angle I'm taking, which is a little bit different to a lot of other people, I've gone, well, okay, I'm going to carry on with this, because they say, no, you're onto something there and keep pursuing it. So that's where I'm at the moment. And the next stage after that is funding, because I'm doing this in my own time, because I'm a full-time teacher. So that whole research sits above that, and it's all done in my own time. So we'll see what happens with if I got some funding for field work and a bit more office work, I'd progress it to the next stage in terms of technology applications. That's what I'm looking at the moment, is better technology applied in the field. And interestingly enough, I've been approached by some members of the Indigenous community or elders. I can't really say much about it at the moment, about their historical narrative in terms of their experiences of the phenomenon as well. So I'm having a conversation with them at the moment as well.
Interesting. Well, you covered a lot of stuff there, but that's all right. I got my notes on, because I'll go back and ask you about, because I want to ask you about the Aboriginal things. But, you know, this is why I love what you're doing. And, like, I saw your YouTube channel, and, you know, I know it's new, but it doesn't have a lot of views. And I was like, wow, this guy's work is way too good to be, you know. So I was like, I've got to get you on, so at least I can do a little bit to help spread the word, kind of thing. And hopefully, you know, maybe someone out there will hear and you can get some funding. So, because really how I came to it, is, you know, well, a couple of ways. First of all, I sort of had what I would class as an encounter when I was quite young, about 9 or 10. And then that kind of, you know, as you said, it changes everything, because you have to, when people ask me about it, I normally say to them, I don't necessarily tell the story, but I say to them, what you got to understand about seeing something like that, right, is that I wouldn't say the world ended for me, right? But then after that point onwards, I just realized what you said, my perception of reality or what I thought was real is no longer real. So then I wanted to go find out what is it, right? And here's the thing, I don't do woo. Like, me and my mates, we joke about it, right? We're science-based guys as well. And look, we're not smart guys, right? We're just normal guys trying to figure out, like, what the fuck we're seeing, kind of thing, you know? So, yeah, that's why I love, you know, what you're doing, because it's coming from a science angle. And so when I first started seeing them in WA, so in the 90s, about the mid-90s, I started going up north a lot. And I had a job opportunity to go work in Carnarvon, and I loved fishing and surfing at the time, so they were my big things. Anyway, I started traveling between there, sort of in a bit south of Broome or Port Hedland, lots, you know, like I couldn't even tell you how many times. And when I first started seeing them, they were always sort of low on the horizon, about 15 degrees, maybe sometimes a bit higher. But they would seem to sort of, you know, be following me. And at the start, when you first start seeing it, and like even today, right, like I feel crazy telling people this stuff, right? But you got to remember, this is the mid-90s, so no drones or anything. And all I knew was that these things were real. I weren't seeing them. Sometimes they would come closer to the car. Sometimes they would skip ahead, like, and wait at certain points. I saw all sorts of different stuff. Even I probably all up saw them maybe 20 or 30 times. But it was enough to know that, like, because at the start, like, I shit myself. I was like, what the fuck kind of thing. But then I sort of, like, started changing. I was like, well, if they were going to hurt me, they probably already would have done it. So then I start going through my head. And then, interestingly enough, when I got to Carnarvon, right, I started fishing with this Aboriginal guy. And, like, he kind of changed my life, right? Because he taught me, like, from the fishing point of view, that, you know, you go fishing like every day, but you only take one or two, right? Yeah. Like, white man comes, they put a net around the whole lot, they kill them all.
Yeah.
So, and he started teaching me this way of being more connected to the land. And he started telling me things like, you know, the land will look after you and the spirits will look after you if you do all these sorts of things. They will guide you. And anyway, so I told him about the orbs, you know, I was told him what I saw. And he just kind of laughed and he was like, oh, yeah, basically, he said, you know, they're well aware of them. And he told me a few interesting things. And he sort of didn't really know a lot, but the cool bit of this story I'm getting to is he told me they have a name, I can't remember what it is, but it starts with K, like Kudichaman or whatever, but basically like a shaman. And he said, look, these proper guys, they live out in the desert, right? They don't come to town very often. Because I said, like, who would know more about this, right? And he says, one of these guys. So I said, how do I talk to him? He goes, look, they're out there. You can't just go out there. Mm. But he said, they come, you know, once a year, maybe every couple of years they come to town. I'll let you know. Anyway, about 3 months later, he tells me, oh, they're coming to town for a funeral, but they don't stay in town. They would stay, it's about 5 or 10 Ks, like up the coast. That's in town for them, you know. So anyway, I went and met with this guy and I had to talk to him through a translator and he was a proper, you know, one of these, whatever they call it, shaman type man. And anyway, he told me a lot of really interesting stuff because I also asked him about Bradshaw paintings and Dreamtime.
Right.
Anyway, what he told me about the orbs, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, is that he basically said the sort of ancient ancestors, past spirits or whatever, but he said some of them are also new spirits. I don't know what that means. But he said basically, yeah, that they were like, they've been doing it for thousands of years. They sort of guide good spirits through the, you know, the desert and they're doing lots of, because I was like, what are they doing, you know? And he basically just kind of explains it away, you know. He also told me that they could also summon them and then they do summon them certain times for certain rituals and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd be interested to know, like, your thoughts about the Aboriginal connection to these orbs.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting cultural narrative there because even in Newman, they've got a Dreamtime story about in extended dry periods without rain, they had this rain dance around some what they call rocks up there where the swimming pool's built over top of. And apparently in the story, these rocks would split open and a light would shoot up into the sky. And clouds would form and it would rain and they would attribute that to, their invitation to the spirits to make it rain through this dance and narrative that they had. So, and to me, that was a UAP story, their way of understanding perhaps the science and technology related to some form of NHI. And then, I've been in the conversations I've been having recently with some very well-regarded, again, Indigenous elders, that their cultural narrative, as you know, is thousands and thousands of years of the phenomenon and the spiritual aspects of it in their lives. But they talk about structured craft, not just orbs, these people in their communities, and even landing and also non-human beings. So they've got the full spectrum there from the spirit orbs, I suppose you'd call them, through to structured craft within their thousands of years of history. So that, like you said, they're well aware of all of this. And I think a big part of our missing pieces of our puzzle is delving into and working alongside Indigenous peoples and First Nations people on their cultural narrative of the phenomenon. I think something that's really overlooked, and I think we'd have a much deeper understanding of why consciousness and a spiritual connection is so important. In other words, being grounded in nature rather than working against it. I think there's that whole level of understanding is what they have, and perhaps secular society has lost. And as you know, once you do connect with this and you see something that changes your worldview, your whole outlook and personality changes on life in terms of trying to work within natural rules And I think you become, you get the attachment syndrome where this thing starts to follow you around and be part of your life, which then makes it hard to sit there around other people with all the stuff going on in your head, which doesn't go away. It comes and goes, but it doesn't go away. In terms of, I think there's more than one type of orb, though. I think you've got maybe what they call the passed over spiritual side of it. I think that you've got a naturally occurring piezoelectric phenomena, because I've done a lot of background work on that too. I think you then have NHI orbs and then structured orbs. And I think that they could be, some of them could even be man-made, some of them could be non-human or a combination of both. And then I'm also interested in an underlying ecosystem component, which is in my papers. That's just part of the ecosystem that we can't see in terms of energy and matter. So there's a whole range. And I think that in some places around the world, it's a great place to hide if you're an NHI. I bring that up too. So, you know, the magnetic anomalies that occur in the Pilbara, they're a great place to hide if you're NHI. And I think there's, I talk about biomimicry as well. And there's a lot of conversation around the world about the phenomenon in biomimicry too, mimicking things in nature as a disguise instead of going around in their true form as well. So there's a lot, there's more questions than answers for sure, and it's only by following the science and connecting with consciousness, and I would add in First Nations understanding of all this too, because they've been around a lot longer than we have, and their cultural narrative is probably a lot more revealing than we yet realise.
It's so interesting. It's so interesting. And like, they just talk about it like it's, and look, because I find really interesting, even this conversation that you and I are having here today, right, is we're past, are they even real? You know, and like, because I'm 52. So when I was growing up, you got to remember for the first half of my life or more, like I didn't tell anybody, right? Because everybody would just think you're a kook or whatever, you know, and then, and then you start realizing, oh no, actually this shit's real. And I think I've got the same opinion as you. I think there's a lot of actual different things going on. Mm. And like the second or third night I met with the Aboriginal elder guy, I took a picture with me of a alien and he pointed to it and said, oh, Wanjana, or he gave it some kind of name.
Yeah.
I've probably messed that up, but he had a name for it.
Mm.
And I just showed him a picture of a small grey. And I was like, you got to remember, this is the middle of the 90s, doctor. I'm just like in the middle of the desert. I'm like, my mind is blowing, you know. So, and then interestingly enough, so because you've probably been along for a similar kind of ride, and it's interesting how it's sort of ebbed and flowed. And now, you know, it's got to the point where the conversation is. And look, a lot of my sort of non-believer friends have shifted from at least being, oh, it's not real, to like, oh, they say military tech, you know, it's military tech, you know. But yeah, what do you say to those sort of people who say that there's only really one thing going on?
That's a hard one. The military, like the drones in the sky around the world that we've had for months on end. It's a difficult conversation because I, like you do, I test the water, see how far they go, and then I just stop with everyone, because that gives me a gauge on the level of conversation that you have. And it's not egotistical. It's like, it's no use. It'd be like talking to a brick wall. It's no use talking to someone that's not ready to have a broader conversation. They have to, with this whole thing, people have to find it themselves. And what
exactly we're saying,
enough of the world to be at that stage where we jump to the next level of consciousness. And that's what's happening, I think. So the conversation is approached carefully, and I align myself with it and stop at that level and then just see what happens. And so there's such a broad range of conversations you have now. I've gone really, really in-depth technology side of things. I've gone into other people with the spirituality side of things. But it's difficult with people's perception. And in terms of technology, I suppose it's about educating yourself, isn't it? So you can have those conversations. Okay, this person's focused on the technology. Let's see how far we can push that before they realize that, well, there's a limit to that because there's things we don't understand, and how could they possibly be technology, and let alone the technology that we have today? And then I'll talk about coveted programs. So I can have all those conversations along those lines as well. And then I think in terms of you probably drop hints about consciousness studies, or have you read such and such, yeah. Or have you read some other books? I've got a whole bookcase of all this stuff. So books like Mind Reach, or have you heard of MK Ultra? So you kind of point them in these other directions. You got to be gentle, and there's a lot of armchair opinions out there that have no. It's like a balloon with nothing behind it. So they'll have an opinion on everything, and then you go, well, have you read this book? Have you talk to this person, and it's kind of, well, how can you have an informed opinion? Then it just becomes, well, that's just your belief system. And if your belief system is based on your values, and your values are reflected in your, you know, that's a reflection of how you perceive life, then you're in your own little bubble and you have an opinion, but that opinion is only based on a belief. So they talk about technology, but that technology, everyone else has told them something rather than them going and finding it out for themselves. So you end up in your head with everyone else's ideas, and you start pouting that off. And then it's, well, that's just a reflection of, you know, 50% of people that believe that. What about the information that sits behind it? Have you actually looked into it? So I just stop. I like, even around colleagues and my social circles and all that, there's a certain you just stop wherever they're at, because there isn't any point, because all you do is put up barriers. People get offside or very, very opinionated, because it's quite confronting to sit there, like the conversations we're having, even on the Indigenous side, because people have preconceived ideas about Indigenous culture too, based on what everyone else has told them or what they see going on around them. So you go and have this conversation at that level about that aspect of their culture, and that can be quite confronting for an everyday person too. So it's about, I suppose, a lot of hand-holding and a lot of understanding it and trying to educate people.
Yeah, they're really good points that you made there, because I think about my friends and the different levels of depths of conversations that I have with different ones, and some of them I just sort of go gently because, you know, they're coming along, but, yeah, they're not quite there yet. And what you said is, my theory as well, right? I try and encourage people, right, like, don't believe me. Go read, you know, read all these papers. Like, I've read hundreds of books and listened to literally thousands of podcasts. And I pretty much spend 6 hours every day listening to some kind of podcast, because I figure that if I just fill my brain with as much information as possible, I'm at least going to get some kind of objective overview of, like, because really the $1 million question, right, is like, what are they? That's really what I just, especially after you see them, you just want to know, what are they? And it's interesting once you start talking to people, how they've got the, and with the Aboriginals, I was going to say something about that with the Dreamtime. So, you know, going back to what you said about MK Ultra, right? So you go down the rabbit hole and then you realize, oh, this shit's real. And, like, not only is it real, but they were really doing it. And for the listeners who don't know what we're talking about, so you're talking about remote viewing, astral projection, astral travel, that kind of stuff. So when I had the campfire meeting with the elder too, right, I asked him about that. And he said, oh, yeah, basically he told me they could do that. And he actually told me that they could hook up in there as well. Right. And, like, I don't know if you followed much about the DMT, 5-MeO and all that sort of stuff that's going on and that kind of space, but that's a similar kind of thing. The people that go in there describing encountering entities, but also being able to actually go to a place and other people see the same thing and you can meet somebody there. I don't know if you've followed that, but do you think that sort of ties in with all this as well? Like, because a lot of your videos, sorry to cut you off, but you talk about, you know, I won't go into it because I'll just butcher it. But, you know, the other spatial, you know, other dimensions, yeah.
Oh, yeah, because there was the, was it the telepathy files and yeah. The hill or something in this alternate dimension in terms of consciousness and these children that can meet there. But I've, yeah, and this, I was listening to the professor talking to Ross Coulthard about that too, a neuroscientist professor that's got involved in that whole area of consciousness studies and telepathy. And I'm an experiencer myself, so I know these things are real, or they're real to me in terms of precognition, bilocation, on location. I've had all of those, and in my book I wrote, I try and separate them out. So I went through my life to try and categorize all these experiences to separate them from normal dream processing that goes on every day to day in your life that your brain does. So I think that the remote viewing, and especially remote viewing and biolocation and precognition, are all parts of the same phenomenon with consciousness and connecting to your higher self. And I think a big part of that, once you open up to all this and the phenomenon is part of your life, I think that process of evolution within yourself accelerates as an experience. And you're probably well aware of that, and because your worldview changes, that what you see is only part of what there is. And I keep telling to people that you're in a biological body which has a biological eye that sees a certain spectrum, so 400 to 700 nanometers. There's the entire electromagnetic spectrum out there, and you cannot even see it. You have no idea what's going on around you outside the visual spectrum, let alone connecting to your higher self and a consciousness field. And we talked about dimensions, and I think this whole scalar field thing that's been suppressed, because I've been writing and publishing on the scalar field because my 5 years of research has led me to that. And there are people in history that have made that connection, Maxwell, Heaviside, and a few other authors, people trying to solve the link between relativity and quantum mechanics. I think that's all tied up into it. And for some reason or in some way, you know, the military's got heavily involved, figured a few things out and gone, wow, this is, you know, we need to hold on to this because of our adversaries. And I can understand, as Ross says, I can understand the whole Cold War mindset in terms of all this, and we need a weapon, you know, to stay on top. And so because everything else is connected to that, from scalar weapons to UAPs and NHIs and structured craft and orbs and even ancient artifacts and the public narrative of a history versus Earth's true history, well, that's another whole subject we won't discuss.
Oh, but yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, and the lies that we've been told. So, but I think that's all connected, and recovering artifacts as part of that are on and off planet. So if we come to a stage where in the public domain we can say, well, you know, we accept that you need to hold on to technology, but we're ready we're okay with NHI and other civilizations from other parts of the galaxy now. We're ready to rise up to the next level and engage in that conversation and be part of it. And we don't need this, you know, 80 years of history of taking it all off us now, because we're missing a big part of our science because of that. And to have a small part of society operating outside of government oversight that is doing these potentially destructive things but also awesomely creative things, and the rest of humanity is missing out and living in misery, or a lot of the Earth's population is, then we need to do something about that. And I think this is all part of it. You know, this whole what we're seeing going on around the world is, time's up, guys. You either bring humanity along for the ride or the other guys are going to do something about it. And I think that's where we're at. We're standing at the precipice, and we need to jump.
Are you one of those other guys?
Yeah, I was talking about other guys as in non-human guys as well.
Oh, sorry, sorry. Because just all the reason I ask that question is, like, for people like me and, you know, the So one of my listeners, Stan, actually those videos that I sent you, so they're videos that he sent me, and they're quite interesting. You know, people like us, we're curious, you know, because we want to know what they are, but we also don't want this stuff used against humanity, if you know what I mean. We don't want, you know, taken over by military tech, because I've followed this like closely, trust me, way closer than I'd say 99% of people on this planet. And I've always said, mostly from the start, pretty much the same thing, that I think there's a lot of different things going on, but, you know, these flying saucers that you see around military bases frequently, well, there's some kind of military tech. So, and if you start going down the rabbit hole, you'll start realizing there is actually plenty of evidence for, you know, retrieval, crash retrieval programs. You've probably followed Vajinja, even like we could talk about Westall in Victoria, you know what I mean? So it's not new. So the military's been onto it for a long time, and that just sort of is what, you know, we're worried about. The UFO community is worried that, because leading on to that, you know, my next theory, right, is, and you've kind of already said, you know, what you think about all the stuff that's going on, but, you know, my theory is like fake alien invasion, right? And the problem is, right, shit's so good these days that you can actually even be there. They could roll aliens out on the White House lawn and you could be there and see them and think they're real, and they're not real. So how are we going to be able to disseminate between, you know, what's real and what's not real? Because I think my fear is that they'll use this in some way to get communities, you know, to comply, because they're going to, oh, you better stick with us. Because if you look at it from the aliens' point of view, like say Roswell, right, apparently this is what a lot of theories going around say, is that, you know, the aliens are a bit pissed off. You know, like they crashed one of their craft, we chopped up their buddies and took their technology. You can imagine if that happened to you, you're not going to be too happy about it. What are your thoughts about all that?
Yeah, I've been looking at, as you, I read a lot about and follow a lot of this, and there's also the book Trinity by Jacques Vallée as well. There was stuff that happened before Roswell that was covered up as well. But he talks about the idea of a gift and that as well. And I think Jake Barber, in his recent, you know, what he's doing now, talks about being given a gift as well. That, yes, some of these seem to have been brought down on purpose using military hardware, you know, microwave technology, or radar arrays to interrupt their EM fields, and it appears that other objects are a gift too. And I think there seems, I mean, I just listen to what other people say, that the narrative is that the beings doing all this are at a stage where we're giving you all these gifts, but you're keeping them to yourselves and weaponizing them when they're meant to be for the good of humanity. That there's that narrative, and Ross talks with his interviewers about that as well. So in terms of the technology and the hardware, yes, there is a danger with scale of weapons technology, especially that you could just surround the planet and then you could just pinpoint any part of the planet and do whatever you wanted. And in that potential, I think that day has arrived. Now, who's got that and whose hands it in is the problem, because there's no oversight, like you said. There's a lot that operates outside of international law when it shouldn't, both in terms of other countries too. So China, Russia, France, Israel, United States. And I think quietly, and no one talks about this, and maybe I'm the first to say it, that Australia is part of it. And we seem to be the quiet backyard. And I think the reason there's total silence over here is because it's the convenient backyard for a lot of stuff to happen, and no one really takes any notice. But I think that might change with Ross Coltart's work, you and I, a few other people around, and what we see, what we're seeing, and what we're doing. So that, yeah, it's time to somehow we need to be involved in the technology, but allow the industrial complex and government to hold on and keep developing that technology. I mean, I want to be able to, you know, go to the local spaceport and hitch a ride to Mars for a weekend. You know, that's you keep the technology, but let's just grow up a little bit and be part of the, you know, the galactic civilization, rather than run around saying, well, I've got this weapon and I've got this weapon and I'm going to use it against you and you can't know about it. And we're keeping the science and keeping everyone else, keeping the planet in a miserable state while we go off and do all these things. And it's not our planet anyway, according to some people. We're meant to be looking after it, and we're not doing a very good job. So, yeah, technology is a double-edged sword, and the way it's handled is potentially going to be quite dangerous. I mean, look at the whole UFOs and nukes things. Robert Hastings was brilliant on that, talking about we have these other beings which may or may not have a human partnership. Like you said, there's structured craft that have been they call alien reproduction vehicles versus actually original NHI craft. But whichever ones they are, can just play with our technology and turn it off and on in terms of our nuclear arsenal. And if you go back to Trinity and look at a lot of that stuff, you can see there's been an involvement of UAP ever since we've been the Manhattan Project. That they've tried publicly to push aside and say, it's there's nothing to it. So this is all coming out, and I think it's just an education process. It's making people that it's more than just aliens and UFOs and anti-gravity. They're just pop culture terms and very good for counterintelligence, and you need to get past that.
I feel like that's the problem. Yeah. Everyone seems to just lump the whole thing into one. And I actually think there's a lot of different things going on. But it feels like, from my view anyway, that disclosure is a slow drip.
It is. Yeah, it's not this. They talk about catastrophic disclosure, but we've had disclosure is a process, and the people that are prominent in the field publicly pushing for it will tell you that. There's a few like Stephen Greer that will talk about catastrophic disclosure as an end to it, as the last resort. I'm a little bit in two minds about whether that would actually happen in terms of, because catastrophic could be the fake alien invasion narrative, or it could be actual NHI just saying, right, we've had enough, we're just going to do a mass appearance, let everyone deal with it, and then we'll back off and we'll come back in, and we'll just sit in your skies with these 10-mile wide ships and just sit there and do nothing and let you sort it out. So, who knows? Who knows? But I think within the next decade in our lifetime, we're going to see some huge shifts in terms of science and technology, understanding our place in the cosmos, educating the public, changing our perspective on the true history of our planet. All that sort of stuff, but it's a careful process, because we get this cognitive dissonance. What people don't understand and what they fear is they become fearful of, and when they fear something, they get angry, and anger leads to violence. So it's avoiding that cycle in the human response to it that's key.
Yeah, all excellent points there. I couldn't have summed up better. It's refreshing to see like people like you, to be honest, because for a long time, I felt like we haven't really had anybody, credible on our side, sort of thing. And that's why I'm loving Coulthard's work. and obviously he's having to be careful about information because, and look, I don't want to sound too crazy, right? But even like there's certain things that if I just said in public, like it is going to freak people out, but I guess, education is the key, as you touched on there. One thing I did want to ask you about orbs before we get off them, if you just had to have your best guess, like what would you say they are? And the other thing I've always been curious about is, what do you think they're doing?
Yeah, and I'd have to go back to before about what they are, because, to me there's several types of what they are. One is natural piezoelectric orbs from EM anomalies. Another one is a natural part of the ecosystem that we can't see. So potentially another life form, biological life form that might be plasma-based or light-based. And another one is there could be some sort of spiritual connection in terms of orbs. That manifest due to a connection with your consciousness, that are in a higher dimension, because you go through. I mean, look at how religion and spirituality talks all about that. And then the other type of orb, I think, is some sort of structured structured craft that may contain an AI or conscious entity. So I think there's, you know, there's four or five types there. So that would answer that question. Yeah. So there's not just one type from what I've seen or what I've observed or experienced. Yeah.
And what do you think they're doing? Because those videos I sent you on the email. So they're from he goes by the name of Stan, my number one fan. He's a truckie, and he's got quite a story, and he's going to come on one day. But basically, he's had some encounters with Aboriginal people up there where he looked after them and had an opportunity to do the right thing or not, and he chose to. And so, you know, and even before that, these things follow him. He had an encounter just a couple of weeks ago, which is one of those videos I sent, and like you can see on the video where I've slowed it down, one of the rod type ones comes like almost like right near his legs, and they sort of like buzz him, but in a friendly kind of way, you know, and they just follow him, and then he said they go ahead on the street lights, and then he said because there's no street lights on up there for like a couple of hundred Ks, he said after they took off, he knew, I think it was Roeburn or the next one, he knew they would be there. And sure enough, when he got there, there was one on each side of the road above the lights. Yeah. And those videos that I sent you, that's the orbs. And they're the typical flashing kind of orb. But we've always wondered, you know, people like me and him, we just really want to know, like, what do you think they're doing? Are they just following us? Are they guiding us? Are they just hanging out? Like,
yeah, that flashing, there's two types of orbs that are higher in the night sky, typically low on the horizon. There's the one that just does a big giant flash like a star and blinks out, and then there's the other one that does the rainbow colors. I think they're, personally, from what I've been looking to, I think they're structured craft. Yeah. Those, they're big and further away, I've got some sort of structure to them, whether or not it's an AI or a consciousness that is the craft, or there's actually an operator in there, I'm not sure of. But what are they doing? I think for people like us that become experiences and develop that connection, it's just trying to create an awareness in people's minds and keep it at the front of your mind without overpowering the fact that you have to be grounded in everyday reality. So you're changing your perspective, because like you said, it comes and goes. And I think for a person, if these objects are in your life or this presence is in your life, that if there's too much of it, because you probably know this, you can become so consumed by it. Oh, yeah. That you miss the whole point of implementing that in your life and trying to be a better person and lift other people up, because you become consumed by something that you can't see and it's not yet. They talk about timelines, so that the timeline's emerging, but it all hasn't become one yet. So I think there's a careful, on their side, this UAP NHI side, a careful hand-holding too, in terms of the development of our consciousness, to a level that we're ready to be part of something bigger. I think that's going on, and it's escalating and it's accelerating on purpose, because we're going to be in a lot of trouble if we don't go down that path, and we go down the wrong path, and the wrong path is not the path that these other entities want to see us go down either. And I think part of all this is that we've been here before. You know, the planet's gone through upheaval before and cataclysmic events, whether by our own demise or natural phenomena. So getting off the planet and carrying on humanity as a higher order species, I think this is where this is the precipice. And to do that, we have to be prepared for it. So I think part of their purpose, what are they doing? Why are they here? One, they've always been here. Two, they've probably seen this all before, the rise and fall of civilizations. And maybe whoever is involved in all this doesn't want to see this happen again. You know, we've lost it all again. We've got to start again. So I've read books on that too, both in terms of ancient history and our current historical narrative about why is there such a secrecy or a cover up around all this, and the history of our planet. So it's people talk about conspiracies, but conspiracies sometimes prove themselves real.
Oh, yeah.
So
for sure, and it's just
I can't give you a straight answer, but I can give you a whole lot of opinions and theories based on an informed opinion. So.
Yeah, well, that's basically what I'm interested in. Like, you probably know more about it than just about anybody else. So, yeah, I was just curious. And I think I tend to agree with you. The cool thing about it is no one really does know, but, you know, we can theorize about it, and that's what's enjoyable. One of the things I did want to ask you about, and then we'll sort of start wrapping up, on your videos, you talk a lot about Maxwell, about his work. Can you give me... just sort of like give the listeners a brief overview, because I started sort of after I heard you talking about him, I was like, oh, who's this guy? I had heard of him before, I think, but knew nothing. So then I go down the rabbit hole and start looking, and it's mind blowing stuff.
Maxwell's the father of our current understanding of electromagnetism and electricity. So that he's and his equations for that. Now, because he was a brilliant mathematician, so when he got into all that and came up with all that, because a lot of our technology is based on his original work, but he had a scalar function in there there's a small group of people behind me that have been figuring a lot of this out that don't want to be named, you know, that they're in confidence like other people, but I got to a stage in my research where I'd been talking about repulsion field science and scalar science, and it just led me to this work. And I'd always, 5 years ago, I'd started with Maxwell on my UFO journey, and it just sat in my mind about this scalar function that wasn't dealt with in his equations, so that our modern electricity, say, for example, our modern electricity is three-dimensional. Now, in Maxwell's original equation for electromagnetism, he had a four-dimensional scalar function there that was dealt with mathematically, so it didn't interfere with 3D vector fields in our electricity and magnetism we know today. So then Heaviside came along and applied vector calculus and gauged away Maxwell's scalar function to zero, so no one thought about it anymore. But what that means is that sitting there is a misunderstanding of the source of electromagnetism and energy in terms of dimensions, because the fourth dimension is not accounted for. Now, when you rectify that, and I've been talking with some people that have been doing this and working it all out, the scalar function becomes mathematically solvable in an expanded equation for Maxwell. So then once you have the mathematical equation and the scalar function restored, you can then apply that to technology. Now, what I think's happened is people have figured that out probably quite some time ago, and then go, oh, we can develop weapons out of this, and that is all tied up with transmedium craft, superluminal travel, and this, because the scalar waves move faster than light. So if you restore that into Maxwell's equation, all of a sudden you have an equation that can explain how waves travel faster than light in the scalar field. So if you're developing technology around that, you want to hold on to it, and you don't want public science to change. But I think we're mature enough to now to go, okay, let's get this sorted out in the public domain. And like I said, keep the technology, but let us have our science back. And part of my book coming out in July talks about all this. The science of secrets is based around, that whole book is based around this concept that we're missing because of Maxwell and Heaviside. We're missing a huge chunk of our public science that has been tied up, wrapped up, and put into the military-industrial complex, because they already know this. And once you get the confidence of a few people in terms of developing or educating the public that we need to redress this issue to move forward as a species on this planet and restore the science and fix all the issues around it, then we can get off the planet. And of course, it's all tied up with, if you do that, what about the fossil fuel industry? What about shares and investments and all that economical sort of stuff? So there's all that there too. So it's we need to, like you said, disclosure is a slow process because things need to be put in place so economies don't collapse. Yeah. I think that's a huge part of it. And then you've got the NHI or UAP phenomenon on the side there. Well, you better hurry up because you're running out of time. And I just get this intuitive feeling that we have a limited time to fix all this now. I don't know, for whatever reason, I get a sense something big is coming and we need to hurry up and be ready for whatever it is. But this is all part of it. So we need hedge funds, we need policymakers, we need the private companies, the energy companies, the resource companies to be ready to invest in something to roll out, so that we don't have this big crash and financial chaos in the transition. And I think that's, you know, for everyday people, that's really important. We all have jobs, lives, families. So, yes, we want disclosure. Yes, we want the science back. We want the scale of field in the public domain. We want Maxwell's work restored to its original mathematical purpose and all that solved in the public domain as well. But that's got to be approached carefully. And I think going through the likes of you and I and other people that have been doing this for quite a long time have had quite a broad and deep understanding of why things are the way they are is really important. So we don't just have panic and fear and opinions that just get everyone angry and cause chaos. So that's my big spiel. On the science and Maxwell.
Said. That was beautifully said. I'll give you a round of applause. I could not have said that better myself. And look, we're on the same page. Yeah, I think exactly the same thing. And because I'm like, you know, like I'm just nobody really. I'm just some dude who's got a podcast, you know. And so what can I do? So that's why conversations like this, I just figure, well, it's all I can do. Yeah. So I'll just do my part. All right, so one name I just wanted to throw at you real quick because my mate will kill me if I don't ask you this, Bob Lazar.
What do you think? That name at me. Everyone throws that name. Because I talked to a few people about him and some very interesting people too, and the same with Stephen Greer. But Bob Lazar, I think. I mean, this is just an informed opinion based on the information that's given to me, because I don't know him personally. You know, he's got a life and all that sort of stuff too. And I think a big part of what he says is what he did, but according to information I read or get off other people, is that there's also a counterintelligence narrative within what he's done and where he's been and what he says that he may not even be aware of being part of, because he's meant to say, like, for example, element 115, you know, these are how these craft are powered. So he may have seen recovered material, but he may have been given information to put people off how these things work. So, and according to my 5 years of research, element 115 has absolutely nothing to do with how UFOs work. It's a total invention, false narrative, and he may base all his mechanics and diagrams on it, but I don't think that's how they're powered, according to my research. And I'm not a laboratory physicist that's been on the inside. I'm just done 5 years of research. I have a small group of people that inform me about my science and to keep pushing my angle and my own research. And Bob Lazar, all power to him for sharing his story. But I do think a couple of things he's doing don't add up in terms of the broader science of how all this works. And this whole element 115 thing, I think, is a wild goose chase.
Well, we know, anyone who's gone and seriously looked knows that there was, you know, government agencies who engaged in disinformation, especially around about that time. And look, man, makes sense. Get the guy in, show him some real shit, right? So people are going to buy whatever he's selling and then sell him like a whole bunch of like fake shit, you know what I mean? I think you summed it up perfectly. I wanted to wrap up on one sort of final point. I'll never forget, right, back in the sort of, in the 80s, or 80s, early 90s, when I really started going into this, I used to like order VHS tapes from America, right? Because that was before the internet and that's how I get information. And I'd get all these tapes and watch all these tapes about UFOs and all these different stuff. And I couldn't tell you half of what I saw, but I just remembered one thing, right? And this is going to lead to my final question. There was a guy on there, and he was a pretty credible source, ex-agent, and he said, whatever technology you think they've got today, right, in your wildest dreams, he said, they had it 50 years ago. So my question is, knowing kind of what you and I know, what do you think the scale is of what they've really got, but they're not really telling us?
Yeah, that's very interesting, because everything I'm doing that you can watch on YouTube and in my books and all that, I have a feeling it's already being done, but it's a process of educating the public through the likes of me and others about that whole process and where it's come from. So I always feel like I'm just I'm the messenger. I'm just writing about stuff that's already been done. I always get this feeling that it's already been done, and that I'm just downloading this information or finding it out and researching it or getting information dumps in my head, thinking about it, formulating it into something. So I think if you go back to this whole thing, we solved the problem of gravity in the 1960s kind of attitude and about structured UFOs. And I think this whole Maxwell scalar field thing's tied up in it too, and scalar weapons. So I think from what we're doing now in trying to understand it in our own work, that they're at least 20 or 30 years ahead of that, and already have craft that can take us off planet, I would say, or at least travel in a repulsive field and I'm not sure about achieving superluminal travel or faster than light. I think the technologies, from what I've studied and researched, and the people around me that inform me that the technology's been developed, there's still issues with it, and I don't know whether or not they've achieved superluminal travel with it yet. But I think I may be wrong, because the old, what was his name for, it's Lockheed Martin or Skunk Works, the previous president. What was his name? I can't remember.
Who you're talking about.
Said we had the technology to take ET home. Now, to do that, you need to be traveling super faster than light. So I wonder if that's already been achieved as well. This is the process of disclosure, though. It's trying to bring the public up to a stage where we accept that all this has happened and all this has been going on, and can deal with it in a civil way, economically, I would say, and spiritually, so that we don't just generate chaos and panic and people go crazy because what they've come to believe in is only half the truth. So, yeah.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today. So thanks for coming on to my humble little podcast. And obviously we'll be staying in touch. I'd be keen, when you get time, have a look at those videos I sent you. And I'll send you actually the raw files that Stan sent me. You'll see, especially like the Rod one that's down low. When you watch the first video, it's just real quick and you kind of don't really – see it, so I've cut it up and slowed it down, but I'd be interested to know what you think, and then I'll put all the links for all your stuff in the description, and hopefully we can get a bit more interest and get a few more views on there, and somebody out there who's got a big wallet might be able to throw you a bit of cash, and you should ring Gina maybe and ask Gina.
Do some futures hedge fund investment, Gina, for this technology change that's coming.
I tell you what, actually, you know what? I just said that stupidly, but that's actually not such a bad thing, because I know that she's quite in, because you know her land's up there, and I won't go into it, but I know someone who's had a conversation with Gina about orbs in the past, so might be worth looking into. All right, thanks again, Doctor, for coming on, and we'll stay in touch. And I was like, maybe every 6 months or 12 months, especially if you're doing more studies, I'd be keen to get you back on and see what's new.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Intense chemistry. Best be aware.
Intense chemistry, expect the list when we sound the list. Western supremacy, intense chemistry. Best be aware,